Welcome to the DARE podcast, where it is all about helping people overcome anxiety and panic attacks. The DARE app has over 1 million downloads and is free to download at dareresponse.com. Now, without further ado, here is the DARE podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. My name is Michelle Cavanaugh. I usually run this with my co-pilot, Ida Becco, but she can't be here today. So I brought in my co-pilot for today, Patrick.
Hey, Michelle, can you hear me all right?
Hi, yes. How's it going?
Good. You look great.
Thanks. You look great, too.
Well, hey, I try. I try, Michelle.
So, everybody, this is Patrick. If you haven't seen him before, you were our first DARE alumni on the calls, I think, right?
I was, Michelle. Yeah, absolutely. Long time ago when I started. Yep.
Yeah. So fill us in, because I'm sure there's a whole new batch of people who join in who maybe not have heard the podcast yet. But if you want to give us a brief introduction and your process here with DARE and where you are now and what you're doing with your books perfectly set behind your head.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it's probably what, 12 years ago, I think. Something like that. My experience with panic and anxiety was very severe. Had it for, you know, many, many years. Tried many different things, counseling, all different forms of medications, a number of different things to try to work through it. And I was not having a lot of success and really was at a place that was extremely, extremely lonely, dark, hopeless, and a number of different other things. My anxiety showed up in intrusive thoughts and also body sensations. And I found the DARE program, believe it or not, through a email I got at work that somehow got through our network system that didn't end up in spam. I remember not opening it for a few days because I thought it was maybe somebody phishing or something, and I was going to do something I shouldn't do. But I ended up opening it, and back then it was a book called Panic Away that Barry had written. And that was my introduction to the program, Michelle. And I began to really, for the first time, read something where someone was identifying exactly how I felt, that truly understood the pain and anguish that I was under. And it was a relief to know that I wasn't alone anymore in respect to that. And really, it's unbelievable how powerful it was, because it was just a book, right? It was not anything more than that. But it was the beginning of a real sense of hope for me. A lot of work, right? A lot of work. And wasn't easy in the beginning. It took a lot of patience, a lot of compassion, as I talk about a lot. And
that's going to be one of the questions.
Yeah. And practice, a lot of practice and a lot of support. So, you know, back then I was working with you and other people who would call in, actually. It'd be actual physical, you know, cell phone call in.
I know. It's so weird, right? The whole hi, who's on the call? And everybody wants to go, hi, stop. It was hard to do.
Exactly. And, you know, the support was wonderful and the people were wonderful, you know, just as they always have been. And it's a really very special group that's part of this program. So, you know, for me, my safe place was home. I did a lot of traveling in my business. I did white knuckle traveling. It was extremely difficult. It was extremely painful, held up in my hotel room, a whole, you know, just a number of things I did to survive. And slowly but surely, through practicing and bringing on the triggers and learning how to respond to it differently, as we all know, as we all have read about, began to take hold. I had these aha moments that I described that were just plateaus of growth and growth and growth, to the point that I've traveled all over the world. I've written a book. I don't have an anxiety problem anymore. I have anxiety, just like everybody else.
Are you anxiety free?
Yeah, I am not.
No. And don't let that just be disheartening, whoever's listening in. That's the goal is not elimination. The goal is you tell me in your words. I usually use this words of like a different relationship with the feeling that's going to come up, just like all other feelings and states come up.
Yeah. So, you know, the evolution of responding to it in the right way was in the past. I became very terrified of the physical sensation of anxiety, and which started the motion of extremely negative thinking, hopelessness. It's never going to get better. I want it to be gone. That's when I will be healed. Nothing I'm doing is working. I still feel anxious, and so on and so forth. So getting enmeshed, being in the loop, all of those things. So I don't have anywhere near. See, I'm not consumed by worrying about anxiety anymore. And so therefore it's not present very much. Okay. Yeah.
It's hard to put into words that whole idea of like, but does it go away? But not in the way everybody's trying to get rid of it.
Right. And so when it does show up, these tools that I've learned, I don't get self-absorbed by it. I don't have the negative language around it. It doesn't get fuel. It flows. It flows through. It processes through in a normal way that it really isn't something that I react with fight or flight or worry or anything. It's interesting as you become more confident with it, you actually play around with it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And when you play, when you feel like you have power and you're empowered and you're not afraid of it anymore, it does lose its, it loses its strength in a real meaningful way. And you can do those things. So it just flows through. It processes. It doesn't get my attention the way it used to. It doesn't become alarming. I don't interpret it as an anxiety problem. And I guess the way I would describe it, Michelle, is it probably does what most people do when they experience anxiety who aren't oversensitized and who don't have and haven't developed a problem with anxiety. It just moves through.
Like that was my post I put the other day with the ducks in the river. Did any of you guys in the chat see that? It was like, you know, here comes the ducks going down the river, and the disordered piece is when we jump in the river and we're like, I don't like that duck. And we're trying to stop the natural process of ducks just going down the river. I don't like it. I hate this. This is so awful. And it's us jumping in the river and going like this that gets the ducks stuck. Plus the language of, like, I didn't hear you say, now when I experience anxiety again, I hear those words. I don't hear you say, oh my gosh, what if it all comes back? And then it all came back and I said, oh no, do I have to do this the rest of my life? And now that it's back, and now I have to dig deep and do dare again. And that's not the mindset that's for healing, right? That's the whole must be gone. And when I feel good, I'm good. And if it comes back, I failed. You suck. What if this lasts forever? Dare is my last chance. That's not the correct language, guys. Just putting it out. You hear how Patrick described that? When I feel anxious again, rather than the big monster comes back in the room and I didn't actually get rid of him the last time.
Yeah. And that was the really major sticking point for me prior to learning what I needed to learn through DARE. And that was that I equated being healed was no longer having it. I also have to mention, Michelle, I was not a big fan of discomfort.
What?
Yeah. I was a baby. And I say it that way because that's not fair to say maybe. But because of my disorder, anytime I was in discomfort, it triggered my anxiety, and I got self-absorbed and again through the old responses and habits, which caused, you know, severe anxiety and problems. Okay. I don't know if anyone else feels this way, but Barry, one of the things, and I've said this a lot, but one of the things that stuck out to me in the DARE book, before Barry gets into the diffuse, allow, respond, and engage, he says, we need to learn to build a tolerance for discomfort. Mm-hmm. And that was new language for me because I equated discomfort or feelings I didn't like having as something was wrong with me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I need to fix it right away. And if I can't fix it right away, oh my God, what's happening with me? And just even that statement, right, is the signal to say there's a problem here. Yep. Hurry up and do something, body, and you know, fight or flee or what have you. And so, yeah, it was a process of saying, Patrick, how can you learn to build a tolerance for discomfort? Are you willing to do action steps to sit with discomfort and not equate it as something needs to be done about it? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That it's just uncomfortable. It just doesn't feel good. It doesn't mean you're down a trajectory of catastrophic, you know, just why am I not on the beam? Why am I not feeling good today? Well, what is going on here? I feel a little bit fatigued. I feel a little bit depressed. I feel a little bit tired. I feel a little bit agitated.
What does that mean? What's wrong with me?
These are just normal. These are just normal. And so I stress that. I mean, I think Barry put that in there for a real meaningful purpose. So am I practicing tolerating discomfort? Am I rewiring my thinking around this is normal? Not being on the beam every day is normal. Having tough days is normal. Having a day of feeling a little more anxious for an hour is normal. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, Patrick, are you willing? You know, I said when I started, it wasn't easy. So I went from no tolerance for discomfort, meaning that something's wrong, to understanding that discomfort is just discomfort. And I hated when you said that to me early on. And I hated a number of things you said to me early on, but it's true.
You said that with such a straight face too, because I know. But you are hitting everything. This is the majority of what most of my calls are based on. And if you don't get that part of what you're using DARE for, all the steps of DARE are useless because there's no special steps. This is not a technique for anxiety elimination. This is not how do you dare away dizzy or how do I dare to feel more disconnected? That's not what DARE is for. DARE is to help you grow your tolerance for feeling shitty. And we are desperately trying to feel better. And again, who on the call, who can raise their hand that says, at the words Patrick was saying, was like, yup, every time there's a feeling, that's a reminder, what's wrong with me? Or there's something wrong with me because all this stuff isn't gone. And when I need to spend more time involved behind the scenes back here, keeping a careful eye to make sure of final elimination. And when I can finally just basically feel good all the time, then I'm healed. And every time I feel bad, it's a setback. That's anything after, if you don't have that mindset of like, I am teaching you how to treat feeling bad differently, then anything else in that book, you're using it the wrong way, which is we're kind of pre-answering a lot of these questions that are coming in, which is, you know, the majority of how do you use DARE for panic? How do you use DARE in the restaurant? How do I DARE through dizzy? And it's, notice they're all forms of discomfort. They're not all forms of pleasure. Nobody asks me, how do you accept and allow feeling good? Well, sometimes, because then we feel good and then that freaks us out too in the beginning. But it's how do I treat sensations I find unpleasant, thoughts I don't like, thoughts of the future I don't like, memories I don't like, physical sensations either I don't like or they remind me of some worst case scenario. So, I mean, and who on here, who's I know we have a bunch of participants on here. Who's fighting all those things and trying to use Zare to alleviate those sensations? Because that's the crux of my one-to-one calls.
You know, it's funny, Michelle. I'll give you a practice that I did to build tolerance for discomfort. Okay. Mm-hmm. So one of my body sensations was, which is, you know, a lot of people feel, was depersonalization, mm-hmm. or, you know, a sense of not feeling grounded.
Okay. And everybody listening right now, by the way, because that's the one everybody wants to hear about.
I hated that one the most. Mm-hmm. And so I decided one day, how do I replicate that kind of feeling that I can practice the discomfort? Not again, I separated the two. Practice the discomfort tolerance, not the execution of the tools. I just want to be in discomfort. I just want to be in discomfort and learn how not to react in a dramatic, catastrophic way. Okay. So it was fall and the leaves are on the ground. And I thought, if I bend up and down and pick up leaves, I'll get to a point where I'll feel lightheaded and dizzy and kind of replicate this depersonalization of not feeling grounded. And I know that it'll bring it on. Mm-hmm. And so my way, I'm outside picking up leaves and putting them in a little bucket because I want to go up and down a number of times.
One handful at a time.
And my wife says to me, you could use a bigger garbage can. I said, you don't get it. I'm practicing right now.
Or a rake.
But here's the deal. I mean, I purposely did that. It didn't feel good and it brought on anxiety for me. Mm-hmm, but that's so. William Fernandez, right? Is that right? William, you remember William? William said to me, Patrick, why don't you change your perspective, internalizing of it as it's a free high, that it's a free high, that you're on psychedelic drugs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is, wow, I didn't have to buy any drugs and I didn't have to buy anything. And I get this feeling. I took that seriously and I began to say that, wow, this feels great, man. I didn't have to do any drugs. I feel like I'm floating in the air and whatever the case may be. So between the two, I was able to shift my experience with it. I no longer am afraid. Do I still have bouts of depersonalization? Absolutely. See,
not because of an anxiety disorder, because of a human condition.
It has nothing to do with anxiety.
Yes.
And so you used to say this that I never liked either.
Oh, tell me.
Patrick, that's normal. Mm-hmm. What you're feeling is normal. Okay. Everybody feels that.
Okay. What was your inside voice?
My inside was, you don't know me, Michelle. I'm a unique case. Mm-hmm. I'm a unique case. And so it became normal. Okay. I began to internalize it as normal. I didn't react. And even if I had this is the beautiful thing. See, at some point what I got was, it's not all black and white. You've got it down to a perfect science. Mm-hmm. And you're no longer going to have any problems anymore. Okay. But what I do have is this. I could have a depersonalized moment tomorrow and my flash response may be, oh boy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yep. I will tell you that I've reinforced this other way to respond in a way that it doesn't become a problem, that my second response very quickly, very automatically gets me where I need to be so that it just flows through. Okay. So this is an important point. I didn't say, you swear on this every once in a while. I know you do.
You can do it.
I didn't say, oh, fuck. I'm back to square one. I went,
oh my gosh.
I went, mm-hmm. for a millimeter of a second. Yeah. Can you imagine a millimeter of a second of a response? Oh shit.
Mm-hmm.
Starts the friggin' train rolling, man. And all before you know it, you're in trouble, right? How about the ability to say, oh no, that's an old response. I know that one. I know mm-hmm. that one. I've been practicing this and I'm on a free high and this is normal. It's going to pass if I don't give it any real value or attention. And I get engaged and I stay present and I move on. And you know what the real beauty I was taught was, this is to me the secret sauce. I don't give a shit if it's here for the rest of the day.
Yeah. And that's that part. I'll have a bunch of questions come in. But how do you not care? That's not the right question. You didn't try and not care. You see, there's a pattern there. There was the middle part of the practice is caring without fighting. And then you accidentally stop caring. You don't try really hard to not care. Do you guys get that? Does that make sense? It's hard to like internalize it, but you go from caring and fighting that I care to the work, which is not work, which is caring, still really caring, but not fighting. That's where that disconnected. That's the paradox of like, feels so bad and I really care and I really hate this, but I'm not fighting while I care. That's how you grow your tolerance for things. That was my post yesterday, the day before. You don't grow tolerance for something by fighting through it. You go grow tolerance for something by allowing it. And your capacity for discomfort gets a little bit bigger. If you're always, here comes this thing and I survive through it, you have not grown tolerance. You've survived through the thing until the thing has passed, but you have never grown your capacity for that thing to be present. And dare is about growing tolerance for something so that it falls off the danger radar. So now you can have I have periods where I feel disconnected or like these are my arms and it's always my mom's face for some reason. Oh, that's my mom and her face and that's her nose. But I never fought that. So that never had my alarm ring to it, but I experience it. Now I used to fight nausea. I used to fight feeling trapped and stuck. So I'll have that same millisecond. I'll still get it. If I feel nauseous, I'll have the gasp. I'll have the oh shit button, but I don't keep my hand on the oh shit button anymore. I have to consciously take my hand off of it and just feel nauseous and just feel trapped. And so we all share similar things because we all have bodies and bodies do weird shit. When we fight the weird shit our bodies do, particularly the ones we don't like, it's the fight that marks it as danger. So you're just going to find more of what you're trying to get rid of and you're going to have anxiety, right? You're not going to fight away dizzy. What your fight of dizzy will do was make you find more dizzy, a bit anxiety. Because anxiety, here comes a survival energy, so you can keep fighting whatever you're fighting. So now you have survival energy and the thing that you were trying to get rid of that's still there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I ask you a question before we get into the questions? Because this was a good point. Somebody had sent in a suggestion for when the alumni come on. Because we see you here now, and we usually hear, like when we've had other alumni come on, it's like a snippet of like a general of like, I dealt with intrusive thoughts or heart palpitations, and then talk about what was helpful. But just for, I don't know, just for people who can see like what did your actual day look like when you were in the midst of it? What did it look like when you were kind of stuck? Because sometimes some people were saying, you know, I'd like to know exactly what their day looked like. Because again, it feels like nobody else could really get where they are when you hear people that are recovered.
Yeah.
What did your day look like when you were at your stuckest point?
Yeah, so just for those that don't know me, my anxiety disorder, and time doesn't mean anything. Okay. And what I mean by that is when you have an anxiety and panic disorder, whether it's 2 months, 2 years, or 30 years, when you have it, it's awful. It feels awful. Okay. But I did have it for 30 years. And my anxiety showed up in a way that it was generalized anxiety every day with panic attacks. So I could be at a level 5 or 6 most of the time, just every day without actually having an identified trigger. Now, I had identified triggers. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, Michelle, in the worst of it, here was my day. I'd wake up first thing in the morning, bam, mm-hmm. with anxiety. An absolutely awful feeling, praying. I can remember being on my knees praying, "Dear God, please lift this from me. What am I doing wrong? I'm trying to do the best I can, and yet here I have this." In order for me to deal with it, and I still had the anxiety present, was I would distract myself the best that I could. But when I was distracting myself, it was forever present with this awfulness that I gave it. This also what accompanied that was a lot of negative thoughts about myself, that I'm defective, that I'm ashamed, that I can't let anybody know that I have this. And you can imagine when you have this internal dialogue, why you're feeling high anxiety and your stomach is nauseous and you can't eat and your pant size go down 3 sizes because you can hardly stomach something. And, you know, you're living in this world of being an imposter. To this day, I don't know how I possess the courage to do certain things. Now, it got to a point for me where I only felt safe at home. So I would walk, I would run, I would eat differently. I can remember sitting on my couch at times, just like pumping my arms and moving my legs so that I wish I could just get rid of this stuff. Mm-hmm. I wish I could get rid of this stuff. And it would never go away. Then I got insomnia really bad. I couldn't sleep because of my anxiety. And I would remember thinking, maybe tonight I'll sleep. And I would go to bed and ruminate. I had a horrible time with OCD. And it became exhausting.
Yeah.
It became absolutely exhausting. And, the panic attacks were so horrible. I thought for the longest time I was going insane, that I was crazy. That I would be institutionalized. And I can remember driving past a psychiatric ward to my work. And Michelle, every day I passed that place, I would say, I'm going to end up in there. So, you know, meanwhile, I'm a highly successful businessman. On the outside looking in, no one would know that Patrick Toohey was an absolute mess. And I, you know, just so everybody knows, my life is beautiful and wonderful today. And there were two occasions because of my anxiety being so severe, and I was so tired of it. And I don't mean to scare anybody, but I just want you to know that I went from this very dark, hopeless place to who I am today. And I want to say that because I want everyone to know that no matter how bad you feel, no matter how unique you feel, no matter how you think that I'm not getting it, no matter that you think that why is it taking so long? I had Tracy was one of our early members, and Tracy used to have this beautiful saying, "Let time take time, be patient. Let time take time, be patient. The time, if you get it in 2 weeks, God bless you." And it doesn't mean anybody needs a lot of years to get to the other side of it. All I'm saying is, you know, to let time take time. And so I went from I'll share this just very quickly. I woke up Is it okay if I share this, Michelle?
I don't know what you're sharing, but go for it.
Yeah. I don't want to scare anybody, I guess. So anyway, this was at the end. Okay. This was at the end. When I just really didn't think I would ever get better. So I woke up, I had moments where I would wake up 2:30, 3 in the morning in a major panic attack. Mm-hmm. I remember asking myself, why the hell do I have a panic attack right now? I've done nothing, but I would. And
this questions too, that just came in. So keep going.
And there's no logic to your anxiety and panic when it occurs sometimes. And just real quickly, whenever I tried to analyze, maybe you did have a cup of coffee you shouldn't have had. Maybe you ate some sugar you shouldn't have ate. But I will tell you that when I went through an analytical process of trying to determine what caused the anxiety that day, that just told me, I know I'm getting off track here a little bit, but that just told me that I'm still trying to figure out a way not to have it.
Yep.
Now it's good that maybe the sugar and the caffeine did spike it. And you can make a choice to say, I'm not going to do that anymore. But that doesn't mean you're not going to have an anxious moment 2 days later. Mm-hmm. Okay. It doesn't mean that. So anyway, I woke up with this major panic attack. And when some of you, it's a very lonely place when someone you love very much and you go to wake her, my wife, because I needed to feel some sense of comfort. Mm-hmm. And then automatically saying to myself, there's nothing she's going to be able to do for me. Which brings me to another point, if I can make it real quickly. I required my wife for a very long time to save me, to make me feel better. Or that I didn't love her, or there was something wrong with our relationship, or that I mustn't love her because I'm feeling all this anxiety. And she can't help me. She can't help me feel better. And you can imagine the kind of experience my wife had around feeling this pressure or sense that somehow she was responsible for making me feel better and that there's something wrong. One of the most significant gifts I got was this aha moment of saying, Patrick, the only one that's going to get you better is you, brother. That's it. And you want to know something? You have it all within you. You are the one who can get to the other side of this. Stop blaming others. Stop asking others to save you. Stop requiring others to save you. It's never going to work. It's never going to be enough. And until you truly own this and you understand that you've done this to yourself, you've created this monster yourself. And the only way you're going to heal it and get to the other side of it is you. And I'll tell you, that was an unbelievable relief. Now, there was still a ton of work to be done. But when I let go that it was my wife's responsibility to help me feel better, Michelle, that in itself relieved a ton of anxiety for me because I thought we have a horrible marriage. Okay. And if we have a horrible marriage, that means I failed. And if I failed, then I'm no good. And these are other things, but they would create this anxiety. Okay. So I woke up and I said, that's it. I've had it. I can't do this anymore. I just can't. So I went to my medicine cabinet. I had all these medications that were prescribed to me and I took them and I went downstairs. I got into my car and my plan was that I would drive to a remote place and take all those pills. And I was pulling out of the driveway and I looked up to the house and I had a moment of this, Patrick, how could you do this to your wife and kids? Mm-hmm. And I turned around and came back in. I sat downstairs because it was very early in the morning. God forbid if I woke anybody, that wouldn't be a good thing. And I waited till my wife got up and told her I need to go to the hospital because I'm not so sure that I won't do something harmful. Mm-hmm. That was a long answer to your question. How did I experience anxiety? That's where it got me to, Michelle. And I just said, and I mean this with all my heart, if you ever think you're not going to get to the other side, or you're unique, or it doesn't work for you, or that no one's had it as bad as me, or no one's dealing with the kind of things that I deal with, I will tell you that that's not true, and that's a lie. And I don't mean to be mean-spirited. What I'm saying to you is that I was in the worst place you could possibly be, and my life is wonderful.
Who can resonate with probably most of that story? I mean, this chats are really filling up. I don't know. It's hard to keep up with them, but you hit everything. And I think everything that people go through this process, and it's to see you here now, right? With your books behind you of like how to help others and inspire others. It's like, sometimes the words that get us stuck are the same words when they're kind of said differently, get us out. You know, if in that dark place, it's like, nobody else can help me. It can be so, what's the fucking point then? And let's just tap out. And yeah, I'm sure that's going to scare people, but I'm also sure this is not a foreign thing I'm saying to anybody. This is stuff that crosses your mind. If I'm desperately spent everything, like my whole life, trying to get rid of this thing that I can't get rid of, well, that's how to get rid of things. Not the best way, not the most productive way, but then this word said the same way, the same word said differently is what gets you out. Wow. It's been me. It's nobody else. I can do this. I'm stuck because of me trying to not be stuck. And when you start again, this is what's scary, because people are desperately trying to not die, go crazy, lose control, do all the things, the worst case scenarios. It's the constant battle and fight of the discomfort, and the discomfort sticks around because of the constant battle and fight. And so we think, I need to fight so I don't go crazy. I need to hang on for dear life so I don't do something terribly impulsive. And it's the hanging on for dear life that's keeping you in that state. And that's a hard message to get, especially in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And then, you know, it's interesting. One, I think this is accurate, Michelle. I read something somewhere recently here that 1 in 3 people have some type of issue with anxiety.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's probably, yeah. One, yeah. 30-something percent of all Americans are dealing or have dealt with some sort of anxiety disorder.
Yeah. And the only reason I put that out there is because, again, I think there's also, it was important for me to really come to peace with embracing and befriending anxiety. And that doesn't mean there weren't times I was angry as hell at it, or I told it to go F off. I'm not, again, this is not this one or the other type of process. There's many different things at different times that work very well. But I also knew that my shame, my anger, my, you know, how about this one? Why did I get this? Why me?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Why me? This is so unfair. I'm a good person. Why did this happen to me? You know, what I found for myself was those types of things kept me stuck in victimizing it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I can't be in a place of power. I can't be in a place of shifting to positivity. I can't be in a place of gratitude. I can't be in a place of compassion if I'm in a place of being a victim. As awful as this feels and as hard as it is, I had to learn to move out of that victim role, that unfair, why did this happen to me? Mm-hmm. And it's in the book, right? How do you sit with it, Patrick, when it's so uncomfortable? How do you just, like, I mean, I just don't understand when you feel so awful. What do you mean just sit with it, or accept it or, you know, build tolerance for it. I mean, it's such an awful feeling. There's no other way around it than to begin to practice that, right? This is
because
the
it's already there, right?
It's already happening. It's already there. I could only do it for 5 seconds in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Then I could do it for 10, and then all of a sudden 20, and then all of a sudden a minute. But I had to not say, why me? I had to really learn to say, you can sit with me and be here with me. I'll say this, Michelle. How can it work? Listen, it was trial and error for me. I wasn't perfect at it at all. So I don't pretend that I'm some, you know, I'm not special in any way. I'm just a normal person, really just trying to find the way to heal it. But, you know, there was this moment for me that said, Patrick, how can you say it's okay for you to sit here with me? Let's say I get up first thing in the morning and bam, there it is, right? And what Dare told me was to try to practice allowing it to be there and sit with it. Tell it to just, you know, join you along the way. Go brush your teeth. Go have some coffee. You know, I still drink coffee. Sorry. Get ready for work. And what Dare is telling me to do is say, hey, I got things to do. You can just come along with me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if I'm in a place like, okay, I got things to do. You're going to come along, but I fucking hate you so mm-hmm. much. I hate feeling like this so much. And I get it because, you know, I said that too, but at some point you have to be able to say, what I need to do here is if that verbiage, that line, you say this all the time, pay attention to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Pay attention to your language.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would then convert that to, you know what? I don't like you very much, but I'm going to try to get to know you. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you a chance. Let's try it for a minute. Okay. I'm not going to frigging blast out at you. I'm not going to say poor me. I'm going to, you know what? Come on, come along with me. I'll try you for a few minutes. You know, that's a different language.
Yes.
Okay.
Tolerance growing language, right?
Yeah, like, and it may take a few times before you actually start believing that that's what you mean.
Right. Right.
Follow what I'm getting at?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing changes. I'll stop with this. Nothing changes if nothing changes.
Yep. That's right. And what you learn is what you do the most of. So if you do, oh yeah, I allow it for 3 seconds, but then I spend the rest of my day, oh God, why is it still there? I hate this so much. What's wrong with me? How much time are you spending in that room and how much time are you spending in this room? So start for 5 seconds, 10 seconds, and then spend more time here, right? Again, it's like getting to know your obnoxious neighbor or like that one uncle in your family is like kind of a dick, right? You're like, oh God, they're coming. I'm also prefacing this for Thanksgiving. That's right around the corner when everybody's family starts showing up, and that's a whole nother shit show. But like, okay, our neighbors are coming over. They're coming over, or the neighbors are at a community party. So if it's, oh God, that guy. Oh, I hate that guy. Oh God, please don't come over and talk to me. Don't come over here. Oh shit. There he is. Hi. Oh yeah. Great. And you get through the conversation. That's not growing your tolerance for. That's like tolerating through. That's surviving through. And then, so it's the party's the same. You are the same. The guy is still just as annoying as he was before, but you are acting differently. You're treating him differently and you get better at not liking him. You get better at just not liking him. And then the importance of not liking him becomes less and less and less. And then you just don't like him. It's not so meaningful. It's not all encompassing. It doesn't dictate the show or your decisions or your life, or I'll only come if he's not there. And as long as he's not there, then I'm fine. See, it's a relationship problem. it's not the guy problem. And so let's start going through all these questions, because I think we've kind of answered a whole lot of them. But I think if we start saying, if I'll start reading specific questions, we can use these words that we've been using throughout this call to kind of show the template of all of this and how this works for. I mean, I see all different, I'm looking over here because it just took me 30 something minutes to turn on this freaking computer. So, okay. So here's an example. Here's first question. And let's try and go through as many as we can. And then I want to talk about your book a little bit too. How do you stop confusing/believing your thoughts as facts? Okay. Most of these questions, we're going to be on a danger hunt. We're going to find out what's the threat, what's the identified threat and the identified problem and how people are treating it. So here's the question. How do you stop confusing/believing your thoughts as facts? For example, if I have an intrusive thought that something bad will happen, then I will believe it to be true and that will happen. That's the question. If you ask that question, you could raise your hand down there if you want, and we can chat with you about it too. So any feedback on that yet, or you go in on it?
For me,
that's one of the questions that came in. And so it's like, what's the identified problem?
Yeah.
Right? This person is treating what as danger or about to be danger thoughts.
Yeah.
Right? So this person doesn't have a thought problem. They have a, what if I have a thought that shows up I don't like, and it's meaningful and it's true, and it's a thought about something terrible that can happen. Like, we're still trying to do a lot of stuff about thoughts just because you don't like them.
Right.
And again, you don't have to like that guy at the party. You don't have to like that thought. You don't have to like the idea of something bad happening in the future. Again, nobody calls me for positive intrusive thoughts. Sorry, I'm choking on my own spit.
Yeah. So I'll share like a real live one, mm-hmm. Michelle, mm-hmm. real quick. So one of my intrusive thoughts was murdering my kids.
Throw that right in there. Yep.
Okay. So in other words, I would give them a bath.
Yep.
And while in the bath, I would have this like very intense thought that I would drown them. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's even hard to say that. Okay. However, and so back then, I mean, I should be locked up. I'm crazy, whatever. So that's a thought, right? So what I began to practice when I began to learn is that, you know, I do have this capacity that's normal, by the way, to have intrusive thoughts. And the only way that I knew that I learned, I'm sorry, to not give them significance, mm-hmm. to not give them energy and fuel, to not obsess about them all day long was what I was told was, Patrick, what you need to begin to do is understand that when the thought comes, can you interpret it in a neutral way, meaning attaching no meaning to it?
Yeah.
Okay. Attaching no judgment to it. And when you do begin to judge it, and when you do begin to feel awful about it, understand that you don't need to fight that either,
mm-hmm.
and just let that occur. Try to just let it sit. Eventually it loosens up and gets you back to, it's just a thought that I need to just remain neutral with and not judge, and that it's normal. The only reason you're paying attention to it is because you are latching onto it, and you mm-hmm. are judging it, and you are giving it a life, and you are interpreting it that you are this person and that you are crazy and that you are all of these things. Now, here's what else I needed to learn how to do. Of course, that's a normal feeling that I would have.
Mm-hmm.
No
mm-hmm.
one wants to feel like they're going to murder. They're going to drown their children. Yeah. So to try to say to myself, you better not have that thought anymore, because that's when you get to the other side of it, was inaccurate.
Yep, that's right. That's the problem. Trying to get rid of the thought to convince, because just having the thought, I see somebody in the chat too, as a mother, that was one of the worst things. It killed me. I even thought of this. Again, wrong. Because we have thoughts. And that's all they mean. They don't mean, well, maybe I shouldn't have my children. Maybe I'm not safe. If I could think about, why would I think about it if I didn't want to do it? Why else would I have these thoughts? And that's why when I was saying, oh, you just throw that right out there. Hey, I have these thoughts of like killing my kids. Most people, oh, I have all these thoughts and I have to be really quiet and only tell the right. Because as if they're shameful. Having a random spontaneous thought about something, if you attach shame to it, that means I'm responsible for this. There's a meaning attached to it. That means something about me as a person. And they really fucking don't. They really don't. I have thoughts like this all the time. If you're on the Dare Advance page, you'll see sometimes I'll post a whole slew of them. I'll do a whole, I never had anxiety paired up with those thoughts. So my quick example is, my littlest one, I was cleaning. So this was a rare occasion. Okay. I don't know. Somebody must have spilled something for me to just be cleaning. So I had a bottle of like Clorox bleach and paper towels. And she comes up, my littlest one. And she looked extra cute. She's got freckles and little curls. And she's like, she shows me this picture. She's like, Mommy, I drew this picture. It's me and you. And I drew it because I love you. I'm like, she's really this close to my face. I went, oh, my very next thought, I could just spray her right in the face with this bottle of Clorox. And I imagined it. And then when this happens, it's usually not just a thought. Sometimes you get a thought and you get this visceral reaction that pairs with the thought. You get a whoosh, or you get a, like, your body just sort of moves with this energy. And then that's interpreted as, and I was just about to do it, but luckily I stopped myself. And then I thought, oh my God, I almost just sprayed her in the face with bleach. Spoiler alert, I did not almost do anything. I did not do it. It was just a thought paired with fear that's designed to whoosh you. And I just didn't have a whoosh. It was just memorable for me. So then the next time she comes around, a couple days later, she shows me another picture. She gets on these kicks of drawing multiple pictures with all of our printer paper. I didn't have Clorox in my hand, but I remembered. That was a memorable thought. And so your body and your brain have a way of remembering things, and then it becomes a conditioned response. And so, and I use this as an example on Dare Advance. Couple days later, she shows me a different picture in a different part of the house, but it was the same sort of situation. Mommy, I drew you another picture and I didn't have Clorox. So my next thought, I could punch her. I'd punch her. This is, it's not that, it's, is that normal? That's just how conditioned responses go. Oh, I had this thought about hurting her with this bleach. Oh, I don't have bleach. Oh, how else could I hurt her? Am I planning this? Do I hurt my kid? I don't do any of these things. This is just how learning and brains work. We think we shouldn't have thoughts we don't like. And that's where we get judgy and the shoulds and this perfectionist. I could just wipe off the dark ones. I'll be left with the light ones, and then I'll be safe and okay. Wrong. You were safe with all the shitty thoughts in your head. You're safe with them. And so until you start acting safe around your thoughts, you can be scared and be safe. So that's the message, guys. Not what do I do about thoughts? Do they remind me of it? Let them. And let your body send you fear to highlight them for you. To do it in a passive way.
My sister, I got the courage to share with my sister one of my intrusive thoughts, okay? And this is just how everybody's different, right? Mm-hmm. So she says to me, Patrick, I think about killing my husband every other day.
Every 12 minutes.
I mean, seriously, I visualize myself stabbing him to death, and I don't lose any sleep over it. It doesn't occupy my time. It's just a thought. And just interesting, right? Just interesting. She has no issue with it.
Yeah, she don't care. She doesn't struggle with intrusive thoughts. She just has.
She just has them. Thoughts. Yeah. Yeah. Perfect example.
You really want to know? Ask kids. Ask kids who don't struggle with anxiety and struggle with thoughts. They'll tell you, ooh, imagine you just fell out that building. Mommy, imagine My kids do this. Oh my gosh. Imagine kids have great imaginations.
Yeah.
We start squashing them, right?
One more quick one, Michelle. So this has to do with a thought around health.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So about a month, 2 months ago, I started getting really bad headaches. Okay. And feeling dizzy. And, so it stayed around for a good 5 days. I began to worry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Some of my thoughts, hey, I'm normal. Okay. Oh God, I hope I don't have a brain tumor.
Yep.
I hope there's not something really wrong with me. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay. So in the past, I mean, that would have just thrown me 9 ways to Sunday. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, was I worried? Of course I was worried. I didn't feel right. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel right. Okay, Patrick. So there's one of two solutions here. You could go get it checked if you feel like you need to, right? Or you can tell yourself some really catastrophic stories if that's what you want to continue doing.
Right.
Okay. So I went and got it checked. Sure enough, I had a slightly bulged disc in my upper neck, which was causing pressure, which was causing the headaches and the light. So there was a real physical reason.
Right.
Okay. And the doctor said, you know, with some rehab, it'll eventually subside. But Patrick, it could take a while before you. Mm-hmm. So now every day I'm feeling these headaches and this. So here's my point. Okay. Had I gone to the doctor and the doctor said to me, you are a clean bill of health, there's nothing wrong with you, then that tells me, Patrick, this is your anxious thinking that's occurring. Okay. And as a result of that, you have tools to work through that in order to process it differently. And so if you are ever in a place where you say, I don't know if I don't have anything wrong with me or not, but I will tell you, and Barry and Michelle would say this a lot, most likely. Now, in this case, it wasn't. It was really something physically that was happening to me. But in most cases, it's not factual.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing physically wrong with you. It's simply how you're responding, which is causing you the anxiety because of this body sensation that you're feeling. It has nothing else to do with it.
Right. And so here's a... here's a physical sensation question. I've been kind of similar, right? There's an actual physical problem. I've been diagnosed with functional acid reflux, which is causing problems with sore throat, heartburn, breathing, etc. My doctor has said it's a mental health problem that is based on my anxiety. Here comes the chicken or the egg thing, right? I have acid reflux of anxiety, but I have more anxiety because of my acid reflux. Will DARE help me from day to day? Yes. And no. Right? Will DARE get rid of my heartburn?
No.
No, especially if you're trying to get rid of heartburn. Will DARE get rid of my anxiety? No. But yes, because DARE is not a weapon to eliminate anything. This is a mindset on, okay, how do I treat? Oh, I whacked my elbow against the wall. Oh, and my elbow's really sore. And you kind of expect it to be sore for a few days, but you don't do a lot. This is kind of like a doing disorder. This is the, here's something I don't like, and now I must do something about it, whether it's ruminate about it or involve myself in compulsions about it or spend my time thinking about it or just really a lot of doing and involvement. And so will DARE help me from day to day? Will the mindset of allowing my body to do its thing while I don't add additional pressure of keeping myself in survival mode for non-survivable things, will that be helpful? Absolutely. Sure, that's helpful. But I'm going to tie that into this question here. Do I have to apply the DARE response each and every time anxiety appears? Or can you do a calming meditation at noon? I have found myself to be have more anxiety during the day now. Applying DARE from 4 a.m. to 8 p.m. is building so much tension that I can't unwind to fall asleep. Do you guys hear the words? What is some, like, how this mindset is not being used as the mindset that we're going for? And this comes up a lot. I have to use Dare from 4 a.m. to 8 p.m. all day long, and it's exhausting. That's not Dare, right? Like, Patrick, that's what you were saying in the beginning before you start the D-A-R-E. If you don't understand what you're doing this for, and you're doing it for the same ways you've always gone out things, which is, tell me what to do to get rid of it. Let's try. And that's why I hear, have you tried this? Have you tried this? Have you tried this? Usually that's, it's not, oh, am I learning this to try and allow? It's really, did you try this? Did that help? Did it go away? Has that alleviated your discomfort? Dare is not that. So trying Dare to get rid of, right? You're applying Dare all day long. It's exhausting. That's not Dare. And that's where a lot of people really get stuck there. My doers are trying to do themselves into beers. And it's not a, I accept and allow this anxious thought. I accept and allow. That's doing. Being means there's my neighbor. And it's a lot of this, throwing your arms up and let yourself be in discomfort without trying to get through it. Do you guys hear the difference between how Patrick's describing how to use this Dare mindset? It's not must check the boxes. And what if I do the D and the A without the R? And what are the times I do the A? And that's the whole wrong approach for this. I mean, even the letters, maybe we messed it up just by doing letters. But, you know, when it was called the one move, everybody was like, yeah, but like how? And it was like, you know, you kind of, and I did this on the Dare Advance call. I know if this is turned, if this becomes a podcast, you won't see this, but I had everybody, oh, I did this on boot camp. I had everybody wave to me. Like, okay, everybody wave. Patrick, wave to me. Wave. Okay. And so what we do is, oh my God, but wait, but Patrick hid this and a finger thing. And I went like this. So I went side to side and Patrick's moving his fingers. Like, what steps and how many times do you wave your fingers and how many times do you do your hand? Like, once you kind of learn the basics on how to leave shit alone, you just practice leaving shit alone. Like, how do you do that again? Fingers up and then fingers down and then fingers up. Like, is that 4 times or 5 times? Well, when do you do this? We get too stuck, and that was one of the questions too, too stuck on doing it just right. And am I doing Dare just right? And am I accepting and allowing this? And sometimes we get so stuck on what recovery looks like and trying real hard to do everything just right. And I'm taking my magnesium and I'm drinking my water, and it's still with this regimented, right? You see that too, right? People that are the stuckest are the ones that are really trying to do it right. Do it perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I'm working really hard at it, I'm not doing what I really need to be doing.
Yeah. It's such an upside down thing, right? Yeah. Like, oh yeah, practice Dare. Practice it all day long, which requires non-effort.
Yeah.
Not trying hard.
Well, you know, so if I could say this real quickly, Michelle, because it does make some logical sense when you think about it. So if a lot of my day is planning around doing the right things so that I keep my anxiety at bay or that I don't have it at all, your mind is occupied with a strategy and a plan and an execution all focused on anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
So at what moment does anxiety not become ingrained in you in thought, in feeling, in emotion, which causes you to think about it and think about it and think about it? Okay. And you spend enough time doing that, you are going to be consumed by it. And you are going to be overwhelmed by it. because it's doing exactly what we're not supposed to do. And what I mean by that is this, and I'm not saying it's easy. All I'm saying is when you give anxiety focus and attention, it is a nurturing ground for more anxiety. That's just how it works. When you engage back in life, when you truly participate in life, when you truly feel passionate about something you're doing, when you truly begin to just do things that, you know, going shopping, going to dinner, going to the park, reading a book, watching a TV show, playing with your kids, doing all of those things that we did before we got this disorder. The engaged part of this thing is about, is to me what engaged meant was, Patrick, it's telling you to let go and get back into the flow, get back into life. Use life, and as you're experiencing it, when you become anxious, to practice. Don't prepare for the day engulfed in anxiety strategy. And then when it happens, say, I should have meditated at 1 instead of 11. I shouldn't have ate that tuna fish sandwich.
What did I do wrong? Look what I did.
What did I do
wrong
here? What did I do this? So, I mean, when you logically think it through, if I'm preoccupied with the strategy and planning of getting to the other side of anxiety, it is front of mind. Front of mind and being focused on it is fertile ground for exactly what it wants you to do. And that means this, that I'm still in danger. I'm working on getting out of danger. I am working on strategies to get out of danger. And they don't seem to be working. And so therefore I need to plan and strategize something else. I need to try something else. Now, trying those things with an attitude of that it brings me some growth, it brings me some progress, it brings me some sense of advancement is what I tried to concentrate on. I was my own CEO, and I'm still my own CEO, Michelle, of my recovery in respect to getting to the other side of anxiety. I heard thousands of things in this program, right? See, one of the things anxiety did to me was I was like quicksand. I had no core foundation of what's good and what's not good. Somebody would say something to me and I would do it and say, oh boy, that didn't work. You know, help me with this. Hey, I need reassurance. Can I ask 17 people how they did this? Did you get over anxiety if you slept a little bit longer or if you didn't do this, you didn't do that? And I'm just like overwhelmed by too much, overwhelmed by too much. Okay. And I came to a point where I said, Patrick, you're in charge. Okay. You need to try to determine when you do something, is it working for you in respect to what DARE really teaches? And that is allowance and acceptance, surrendering, doing nothing, engaging in living life. That's what it is, Patrick. That's what it is. It's not a diet. It's not a exercise regimen. It's not. Now, those things can be helpful. So I don't want to boohoo them. They can be helpful, but they can be helpful.
Right.
And I'll say that
I love
again.
That. They could be helpful, but they could be helpful. I love that. Oh, I'm going to turn that into something.
And so I would eliminate things. I would try something, eliminate things that didn't work. If somebody said something to me, I would say, no, that doesn't work for me. Sorry. Not doing that. Doesn't work. But this does, and this does, and this does. To my goal. Here's the goal. Right. The goal is allowance, acceptance, surrendering, not having to do anything about it, and not caring whether it's there anymore. What steps do I have to take to build that? Not what do I need to strategize in the actions I take so I don't experience it or have it at a severe level? Mm-hmm. That's the wrong. And the more I work on that, and the more I plan that, and the more exercises I do around the thought of this has to be done because of my anxiety disorder,
yes,
you're giving it fuel, energy, and life.
Mm-hmm. Because then even those helpful things, even if they're healthy and they're good, let's try plant-based. Let's try this exercise. Let's try this meditation. Did you try ashwagandha? Did you try this? Well, this research said this. Well, this research said this. And you can get so overwhelmed by like, well, what about this? What about breathing through your nose? Well, what about... If you're doing all those things with a did it work, must or else, and when I feel anxious, let's try a bunch of techniques. Those are using healthy things that might help you with your overall well-being as a weapon. And whatever you're using as a weapon, that whatever's on the other side of that weapon is still marked as persona non grata, right? Danger as a threat. Let's try a run. Oh, running is great, but I don't run. You can be unhealthy. You can be out of shape. You can eat shitty food and not have an anxiety disorder. And you can be very healthy and still have one. And so remember, the disorder is the disordered treatment of anxiety when it shows up. It's a disordered relationship to the feeling and temporary state of anxiety, which keeps it from its natural process of fading. Us, our claws in it are what's keeping it here. Like even on the chat, somebody was like, oh, derealization, that's the one I struggle with the most. Like the answer is in the statement. It's not the derealization, it's the struggle. Whatever you're struggling with the most has the biggest amount of fight, and we're here to target your biggest amount of fight, not the thing you're struggling with. And when you drop the struggle, again, you don't have to be free of something to be free from it. You have to let go of the thing your claws are in. Let it be there. And then it loses its meaning. And then it just starts to fade in presence.
If I could say this real quick, Michelle, and I always say this, but it's important for me to just put it out there. And that is, people who don't have this, who's never experienced this disorder, have no idea how painful it can be. Mm-hmm. And I do have such empathy and compassion, about it. And, we are so much stronger than we can give ourselves credit for, and creative and intelligent and smart. And, when you think about showing up every day, when you are working through getting to the other side, and even before you were ever introduced to this program, I have such admiration and respect for all of us who found ways to make it through, despite this. And we sometimes don't give ourselves enough credit for just how, special we are, just how strong we are, even though it doesn't feel that way. All I can say is this, that, and I didn't believe this early on, but I know it to be true today, that I am a much better version of myself today as a result of this disorder, long before I got to this program. And I have such empathy, understanding, compassion, kindness, what I contribute to others and the struggle and pain that they're in, understanding at a level that's authentic. These are the gifts to this. And I am just so like inspired and proud. No matter where you're at in this journey, let time take time. Be patient. It works. It will work. You'll have these aha moments. You'll wake up a month from now and say, now there's something that changed. They're shifted. I kind of get it. Now I can build off of that. These are the things that happened to me. It wasn't a quick process. And I had the support of the program, of many people who love me, including Michelle, to just say, stay with it, be patient, let time take time, and these things will happen for you. And I will tell you that that's the God's honest truth. Never give up on this. Never quit on this. I tried so many. I was in therapy since I was 20, and I don't want to boohoo my therapy sessions. There were many wonderful things that I learned in therapy and that I grew from therapy. They just didn't do enough for this for me. And so I don't want to talk badly about any of that. All of that was also a blessing for me, but I tried it all. And I will just tell you that this program works, and that always remain hopeful, because it will happen. And I have so much admiration and respect for all of us, for all of us.
I'm so glad you were able to join me today, because everybody loves when you come on the webinars. You're an open book, and people like that. There's no beating around the bush, and this is me, and it's authentic. And yeah, this is what works, and this is what works for me. And this is, you know, you're right. We are all very strong. We're all very good fighters. And then we almost beat ourselves, like you're saying, you know, empathy and compassion, and we almost do the opposite. We almost beat ourselves up for the things that we do because it was hard. But if you look at it from a slightly different angle, right? If two people were walking down the street, I used this for some group I ran. Two of us are walking down the street, and one person is just walking down the street, but I have a 100-pound backpack on, and we both make it down the same street. It's like, great job, Michelle. Wow, that was so hard for me. I did it, and I did it with 100 pounds on. We almost turn it backwards on ourselves and say, oh, it's so hard. Why is it so hard for you? Why can't it just be easy like it is for that guy? He just walked down the street, but it was so hard. We almost, like, we beat ourselves up for something that we get double brownie points for. Wow, you went into the grocery store in full-blown panic, and you still went in the grocery store when your body sensed, thought, like, misinterpreted danger and sounded all the danger alarms, and you still went to the grocery store? It's freaking phenomenal. That's not what's wrong with me. Oh, I suck at this. That's unbelievable strength.
You know what I still do to this today, Michelle? I love it. I absolutely love it. Okay? It's the best part of my friggin' day. Okay? This is the transformation I've made. Okay? I'll go back to the old me. Mm-hmm. I'm defective. I'm not normal. Mm-hmm. This disgusts me. What's wrong with me? All of those very hurtful things. I mean, that's cruel.
Yeah.
And there's no other way to put it. That was me. That's how I treated myself. Mm-hmm. Okay. It saddens me when I think about it, but I get it. I know how you get there. And I was there. Okay. My best part of my friggin' day, I look in the mirror and I say to myself, Patrick, you are a frigging amazing. How you were so creative and how you thought of ways to get through your day while you were carrying around this unbelievably powerful disorder. Mm-hmm. The way you conducted yourself, the way you tried, the way you worked at it, the way you were able to, you made up stories. You know what? How awesome that you protected yourself that way. There was this person inside of you that was saying, no, please, I can't today. Mm-hmm. I can't today. And you had this creative way of making up things to say, I can't do this, or I can't go to that dinner, or I can't take that plane trip, or I can't do this. You were awesome, Patrick. Yeah. You have so much talent. And so much to feel proud about. Because anyone who doesn't have this disorder has no frigging clue. Mm-mm. And I am so proud of you, Patrick. I am so proud of you. And I visualize myself wrapping my arms around me and saying to myself that I love you more than anything you would even begin to comprehend. You are a special man, Patrick. You are a very special man. And don't ever forget it.
Yeah. And I remember that process starting. I remember the day you starting to try that. Yep. And it was, I think I'm going to start looking in the mirror and speaking to myself differently. Because you're going to, if you keep feeding yourself shit and you to feel better, then you still feel shit. Well, maybe I need to start feeding myself something else, right? Yep. My automatic words are like awful. Ooh, let's try something else. And I remember you saying, who wants to try it with me? Remember like that 30 second mirror challenge?
Yes.
And I'm going to say
yes.
All these things. And then you came on the next call. I'm like, so how'd it go? You said, well, I lasted 8 seconds. It's because I pre-wrote out stuff I was going to say. And then I was like, I don't know what the hell else to say to myself anymore. But so guys, this is the end of the practice. So the practice part is, wow, I wanted to change something and I tried it, but it didn't work right away. And so, okay, now what? Okay, let's try more. Let's keep at it, because what you do the most of is what gets better.
Yep.
So if you're really good, if you're distracting yourself all day long, you're really good at distracting yourself all day long. If you're really good at speaking awful to yourself all day long, well, guess what? Guess what's going to come naturally to you until it's, well, I'm going to try something different rather than stop being mean to myself, start something else. It's easier if you're changing habits, it's easier, and rather than trying to stop doing something, start doing more of something else. So let's say, great fucking job. Wow, great job. Oh, you had this awful thought and you had a panic attack and you went to work. Great fucking job. How about that, guys? Instead of what's wrong with me? How about great fucking job? How about that's your new mantra for this week?
Yep. Absolutely.
And Patrick, I know a lot of people want to hear, I had a few questions somebody wanted to know about Dare Advance and one-to-one calls, and a few people asked about your book. So quickly, Dare one-to-one is just one-to-one calls with me. Aida usually offers them as well. I think her schedule's closed out until January. You can book it on the website, dareresponse.com/coaching. You can also find Dare Advanced on the website as well. Dare Advanced is kind of like a little family. I love it. I have the best job in the world. Dare Advanced includes the app. So the app is whatever it is, I don't know, $10 a month. Dare Advanced is kind of like a monthly coaching program for implementation of this mindset, for support. It's really become a little family. People have flown all around the world and the country to meet up with each other, see pictures of everybody who would have never met before. Just smile. I mean, and I love it because I see people who weren't leaving their homes and they have flown to other countries and are running freaking marathons. I'm still sitting on my bed eating chips looking at the pictures going, that's freaking amazing. But it's like, I think it's $29 a month now. And it includes the app and it includes Zoom calls where we sometimes will have our Dare alumni, right? Like Patrick, if you're free, like sometimes Dare alumni pop on. I run 2 Zoom calls a month. Barry runs one. Aida usually runs an additional 2 others that you can choose from that should be back in January, and a small little Facebook page to chat and see like, you are not special. You are not alone. This is I talk about this hours and hours a day, all week for 14 years. And it's a lot of the same stuff I say. So don't think you're going to surprise anybody by the information you bring to that call. We've heard it. There's a good chance we've heard it.
Yep.
And Patrick, tell us about your book.
So the book itself is interesting. A lot of it draws from my journey with panic and anxiety. And so I wrote a book about how cruel we can be to ourselves. And in return, how some of those things, when we're involved in relationships, and I use a forum of athletics, but it can be, the tenets can be applied to any venue of, when we're in relationships, how cognizant are we of the gift of being in a relationship with another human being, and how we're contributing toward inspiring them, helping them feel a value, helping them feel that they're full of possibilities, helping them to grow through their blocks, to truly demonstrate a great deal of empathy and compassion and kindness. And I wrote the book to establish tenets that can be used, whether it's on yourself, to begin to learn how to possess the ability to love yourself more, to know that you're enough without ever having to accomplish anything materially, that who you are in your heart and soul is beautiful, and nothing else is required. And can you imagine if you had the capacity to tap into that, to truly believe that my value is not tied to what I perform or possess or accomplish? Those are wonderful pursuits. And so the idea was such that when I was done with the book, there were practical ways in which I could grow personally in respect to my blocks and in respect to how I treat myself, and use those things in order to help others become their best possible selves. And in, and at the end of the day, you know, I'll close with this. What I know about myself through this program is one thing that's very clear to me. And by the way, I've accomplished a lot materially. However, I know for a fact that when I'm done here, what will be the most important thing that I could ever contribute while here is how I can help another person truly know that they're special, truly know that they're lovable, and truly know that they're of value. And if I can contribute that, if I can give that back, see, I'm just paying it forward. You know, I went from a person who didn't like himself, and I will say hated himself and was disgusted with himself. And I wrote this book to heal that. I use the form of athletics, but it can be done anywhere. I think if you read the book, there would be some really valuable information in it to help you with your own personal growth. So thank you, Michelle, for letting me mention. The name of the book is called Create Forever Teammates. Create Forever Teammates, how relationships and connections are the real things that matter most in life.
And on Amazon, you can find it?
It's on Amazon. Yep.
All right. Well, Patrick, thank you again.
Love you, Michelle.
I will see you soon. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the DARE podcast. The DARE app has over 1 million downloads and is helping people all around the world to overcome anxiety and panic attacks. You can download the app for free at dareresponse.com.